annual Blackhawks convention. It's a Blackhawks Crazy podcast. I'm your host, Scott King. I'm usually joined by Mike Jacobson, my partner in crime, but Mike had to be at a wedding today, unfortunately. So, you know, I had to reach out and ask the Blackhawks for some help. And, you know, I said, can you get me someone who can talk hockey, who knows the convention, that's been at a convention? And they said, you know, we have this guy. He's been the Blackhawks play-by-play announcer for 11 seasons. He's called three Stanley Cup champions and all the glory that came with them. And he's considered by many to be one of the best play-by-play announcers in the country. A fellow that goes by the name of John Whiteman. Would you take John? I said, yeah, I think he can do the podcast.
Well, I'm happy to be here, and I thought the way that that was going to end up as you were telling the story was, well, and I asked the Blackhawks if they could get me somebody. They said, no, but we can, you know, if you want, you can get Whiteman because he's not doing anything right now.
Well, thanks for being here, John. You know, I really appreciate it. It's been great getting to know you the last couple of years and talking about the games with you and the matchups.
Likewise.
And thanks so much.
This is fun. You know, the convention, it's always a good time. It's a time that I look forward to because I know I'm going to see – all Blackhawk fans, for the most part, and going to be able to share stories about, you know, past seasons, the one that just took place, and even seasons going back as far as the old Chicago Stadium. And you know, you share philosophies. You find out about kids being born that you know that maybe the mom was expecting the last convention you saw them. You know, people, unfortunately, you hear about them passing away. So it's kind of like a family get together, a family reunion of sorts. But it's always an awful lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
I should say we also have Brittany Tulis helping us out today, and she usually jumps in on the show. And
go Brittany!
Hopefully she does today. Good old Brittany Tulis, and the Blackhawks are generous enough to have us some guests come in. They have Tommy Wingles coming, who made some news. Unfortunately, fractures left foot, but he should be okay in time for training camp.
Yeah, Tommy Wingles, I love that signing, by the way. He's a guy from the North Shore, Evanston, and he grew up, I guess, in Wilmette. And he played through, make sure I get this right, I'm pretty sure he played through the Mission, Chicago Mission, went to Miami of Ohio, played for Miami of Ohio, and then was drafted by the San Jose Sharks, joined the NHL. His first NHL goal was scored at the United Center against the Blackhawks. And and I remember it vividly. I could still see him taking the shot, and I remember, wow, that Wingles kid can really shoot the puck. But I think Tommy made his reputation in the NHL as an energy guy, kind of a banger, a guy that plays with some grit. And the Blackhawks could use a little of that, especially a hometown guy that would take it to heart. You know what I mean?
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Do you see him being like an Andrew Shaw, not just a guy who can be kind of a wrecking ball and a pest out there, but he has some skill, too?
Yeah. Well, to compare him to Andrew Shaw, I can see the comparables there. I can see where you're going with that. Shaw was pretty decent on faceoffs. I don't know how proficient Tommy Wingles is on faceoffs, but I'm sure if the situation called for it, he'd get in there and he'd do his best. But yeah, I like the comparison. Tommy's a little bit bigger than Andrew Shaw, and if he has a heart the size of Andrew Shaw's heart, we're in for some fun times with the Blackhawks.
Absolutely. Blackhawks also bringing us Alex DeBrincat and Anthony Lewis after Tommy, and those are some top prospects right there, some guys that the Hawks have had their eye on, the organization overall, and we should see some big things from the next couple of years.
Yeah, big things from them. They're not the biggest guys. They're both small in stature, but big in heart. I don't know a lot about Anthony Lewis. I'm going to have to go ahead and plead ignorance there. I know he's from the western suburbs, which is my neck of the woods, and so I'm going to get to know him a little bit better. Played at Miami of Ohio, and a really, from what I understand, he's a really creative kind of a playmaker. He's a smart hockey player, and you can use all of those you can get. And as far as Alex DeBrincat is concerned, he may end up being the steal of the draft last year from last year. He, as you may or may not know, Scott, he played in Erie in the Ontario Hockey League. His first year junior, Connor McDavid was his center. Connor McDavid has just signed the richest contract in NHL history. Just
I think
like
he's
last
doing
week.
Well.
Oh, yeah. You won't have to get another job at Subway to get by. But he was Alex's center. And so that year, Alex went out and scored 52 goals. So Connor goes on to the NHL, to the Edmonton Oilers, and everybody goes, well, okay, DeBrincat, he had 52, but he had Connor McDavid centering. Come on. So what's he going to do this year now? Maybe 25? He got 51 the next year. And then last year, he got 65, Alex DeBrincat did, in 63 games. So the kid can shoot the puck, and I just heard from Stan in the last session that we had. he scores his goals from around the front of the net, which in the NHL you've got to be able to do. You can't beat NHL goalies from way out, typically, unless the guy is, you know, loses the shot in the lights or is having a bad night. Typically, he's going to make that save every time. So I like what I'm seeing in Alex DeBrincat, and I'm curious to see where he's going to fit in with the Blackhawks, the NHL team, if at all. Maybe he'll go to Rockford. We'll see.
DeBrincat had 127 points overall in the OHL last year, too. I mean, you look at that kind of crazy production, those numbers. How do you see that translate to the NHL level? To if a guy's that skilled and putting up those kind of numbers in the OHL, can that translate to the big league?
I think it can, but I think it's going to happen over time. You know, he's definitely got the skill. I'll tell you where he's from. He's from Detroit, Michigan. He's from the Detroit area, so that's Detroit's known as Hockey Town. He grew up playing the game. And going to the Ontario Hockey League and playing at a pretty high level, he's going to know that that's kind of the pattern for the National Hockey League, only it's going to be that what it is, cubed. As far as fitting in is concerned, I look for him to try and make his mark in the preseason. Troy Murray likes to say that in every preseason, there usually is one guy that stands out. There's one surprise of camp. And so, you know, maybe he'll be that guy. And you know what? If he is, that means that goal scoring on the Blackhawks is going to benefit. They lost Artemi Panarin during the offseason to the trade that brought Brandon Saad and Anton Forsberg back. And that's kind of a big loss. He had over 30 goals last year. But if somebody like DeBrincat can step up and be that guy, you never know. If he's got a knack for scoring goals, you can put him anywhere, and he can probably do it.
I'm pretty sure you worked the first Blackhawks convention, John.
You did,
right? How have you seen that evolve to now? We're at the 10th one here. I mean, it's a lot of years, but it's not. And they just have so many things now. They have these great panels that you just hosted right before the show and so many autographs and pictures. What do you think it's done for Blackhawks fandom?
I think, for sure, that there's nothing like this with any other NHL team. And that blows me away with all the great teams in the NHL, especially the original six teams. Why don't those teams have conventions? Montreal would have one that was off the map. The Rangers in New York, you know, Toronto Maple Leafs, Boston, all of those teams should have a convention, but they don't. So this is something that, and you give John McDonough, the president and CEO of the Blackhawks, a ton of credit, because he took the idea from the Cubs convention that's held here and said, why not? Why not with the Blackhawks? And after the 2007-08 season that was really a very successful season for the Chicago Blackhawks, got and one where you saw unprecedented growth to where you knew that this was going to be a good hockey team, I think he thought through that year, you know what, let's go ahead and let's go with a convention. So that first year, it was a bit of a scramble because we were all learning how to be conventioneers and bringing in all these people. And I mean people came from out of the woodwork and put on the Blackhawks sweater and wore it proudly. We had a great time then, and it feels like I blinked, and that was just a second ago, and here we are 10 years later and still having a good time. It's been fun.
Hey, Tommy Wingles joining us now.
Tommy Wingles is here on the dais.
We're making a move. The poor guy's in a boot, and we're making a move all over. What's up, man? Thanks for joining us. Here, let me turn your mic on.
He's got the walking boot on. And, Tommy, first of all, I'm gonna steal some of Scott's thunder, if I may, and say welcome to Chicago. Welcome back home. And being able to throw the Blackhawks sweater on. I remember talking to you last spring in Ottawa on that snowy day and about, you know, possibly coming home. I know you were in a rush at that time, but I remember you intimating that, you know, that would be a lot of fun if it could happen. Well, it's happened, and I think we're all happy to see you in the fold and ready to play Hard Hawks hockey coming up in the fall, but you've got to take care of that thing on your left foot first, right?
Yeah, well, first off, this thing looks a lot worse than it is.
Okay.
It's just a walking boot. I can say in a hockey mentality, if there's a game tomorrow, we'd be playing. So
that's what I like to hear right there. Well,
the tough guy.
Yeah.
Right there, John.
Yeah, we'll get through this, be ready for training camp. You know, fortunately, this happens in the summer here. We have time to recover, but we'll be ready to go, but to the point of signing here, and this is a dream come true. And when you're a free agent, I think your mind goes to the what if possibilities, and you know, different scenarios. And when this Blackhawks one became a possibility, it was a no brainer. You know, this was where you've always dreamed about playing. You know, I've grown up watching the Blackhawks over these years, and I've grown up. You know, watching the Blackhawks win the last, you know, Stanley Cups here. And it's something I want to be a part of. You know, this core group hasn't changed. This core group can still win. It will still win. And to be able to be added to that as a piece was exciting.
I know you're left foot fracture has recovery time at 6 to 8 weeks. But after that's healed up and you participate in training camp and the regular season, do you see it holding it back you back at all, limiting any of your activity or skating?
No, and 100% no. You know, once this thing recovers here, it'll be something of the past. So we'll be ready to go once season starts. I don't anticipate anything beyond the time frame you mentioned. You know, obviously as a competitor, as a player, you I hope it's the 4 to 6 weeks. I hope it's the 3 to 4 week kind of thing. But we have time now, and that's important. So we're going to be in a boot here for a little bit. And but no, long term, I don't anticipate anything beyond this.
Also, being a local guy, what do you think of your first Hawks convention, all the fans here? I mean, there's a ton of them. Have they shown you some love?
They have. This is an incredible event. I've never seen something like this. I've heard about it throughout all these years, but never really had interest in coming to see what it was about for obvious reasons. But, you know, there are some people out here who recognize me yet. I think a lot of people don't. And I was just at Starbucks and Hawks fans everywhere. And, you know, one person, noticed me and wanted a picture, and everyone else turned around. Oh, okay, now that's you. But I enjoy the, be able to still kind of, you know, blend in a bit. But, I don't think they'll last long.
And see, how great is that, Tommy? I mean, to be recognized in your hometown, hockey fans that love this team, love this organization, and now you're a part of it. You turn around, they all want your attention. They all want to talk to you. They all want to be a fan.
It's pretty cool. You know, that was me years ago, that fan trying to track down, you know, your Jeremy Roenicks, your Tony Montes, these guys that I idolized and grew up watching. So it's fun to be on the other side of it. It's something I don't take for granted. I know how many people would die to be in this situation, mm-hmm. Especially guys around the league who grew up here as well. So it's going to be fun, and I'm going to enjoy it.
You've had about 7 NHL seasons, most of which with the Sharks, and you played for a very good Ottawa Senators team. How do you bring all that experience plus 54 playoff games? How do you bring that to Chicago, a team with some great core guys, a lot of hardware, and some new guys too?
Yeah, in a few ways. You know, this team doesn't need a huge injection of experience or skill or anything like that. This team has its core, which has proven it can win. So it's about adding to that core, being a third, fourth line guy who can help contribute on and off the ice. You know, there's one thing about having a core group. It's easy for those guys to feed off each other and be leaders. But I think it's hard at times for young guys who come in as third, fourth line guys who come in maybe as role players to kind of to bond with those guys, because it's a superstar level to a guy who's a role player. So I think it's important to have leaders in that bottom six, guys they can relate to a little bit more in terms of roles on team. It's not, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that those star players don't do everything they can to help the younger player or the lesser skilled player, but to have someone who can be a leader in that role to kind of bring up the second wave, I think is very important, and I think I can help be that guy.
Now, you were in Ottawa with the Senators during their playoff run, so you didn't see what happened here. We went through, I don't ever want to experience it again, a 4-game sweep to the Nashville Predators, and really the only redeeming value was that Nashville went to the Stanley Cup Finals, so it kind of took a little of the pain away, but none of us saw that coming. There wasn't anybody in this organization that saw that coming, and Nashville whacked them. So now Stan says after the season ends, there are going to be some changes because this was unacceptable. So he made 4 trades involving 4 players coming in and 4 going out. He also got back some assets in the way of future considerations and a third-round draft pick. Then he went out and he signed some unrestricted free agents, Patrick Sharp, yourself, Jordan Osterley, Jean-Francois Berube. I may be forgetting somebody. And now you're part of the changes, and you know that going forward, this could be a very exciting year. I mean, with all of your experience, Tommy, and it just seems like the planets are aligning for this particular year coming up. How excited are you to get going?
There are so many good things looking forward to this year. You know, one being I love that the expectation here is to win and not just win in the regular season. You know, this was the number one team in the West last year, and they got swept in the first round, and that's unacceptable. You know, making the playoffs isn't an okay season. You have to go far in the playoffs and really give a run at it. And that's what you want as a player. You want to know that everyone in the organization is committed to winning a Stanley Cup, and that means adding players at the deadline. That means spending to the cap. That means giving the players everything they need to succeed on and off the ice, and it's clear to me that this organization does that. And, you know, it's going to be a hungry group. You know, that's good. I'm sure guys in here trained extremely hard. You know, we all trade hard, but when you have a disappointing ending, there's something psychologically that makes you push harder. And that's going to be a motivating factor. I think nobody's happy with last year, so it made everyone work harder than they would have. And it's going to be a hungry group from day one. And I anticipate this team being very successful again in the regular season, but not to put those games down, but that doesn't matter. This team just needs to get in the playoff and do well.
In your experience, Tommy, how long does it take for a guy, whether it's you or somebody else, a new guy, to find chemistry with everyone else they're playing with?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe a couple games, a couple periods. You know, so many coaches here now change their lineups every couple shifts. If they don't like something going right away, they move it around quickly. So it's about that that time in training camp, that time maybe before training camp, getting to know guys' games, watching each other on the ice. You know, I think you learn a lot from playing, but at the same time, you pay very much attention to other players' shifts. You watch their tendencies. You know, you've seen it playing against guys, but you try to watch it in practice, what guys like to do. And a couple conversations here and there with guys, you can usually pick up pretty quickly. So I definitely think chemistry is a huge, huge factor. It, as players, you certainly like to play with the same players over and over, so it becomes second nature. But we'll all get there with, you know, the group of 12, 13, 14.
Have you played for coaches before that like to mix it up the way Quenneville does, that will juggle guys, that will shift guys around?
I think so. You know, I've heard Coach Q likes to do that pretty often, that he's pretty pretty active in switching them up. But, you know, that's just a sense that he has through his experience, and he's proven and what he does works. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, I think there'll be a lot of games where I may start in the bottom six, but if he doesn't like something, you know, he's not afraid to move certain guys up and down the lineup. So it's something you look forward to. You know, I would love to play a shift or two with Taze or Kaner and maybe get a couple goals with them.
Tommy, every year teams change a little bit in the National Hockey League, and I know you played a number of years with the San Jose Sharks and had good success with the Sharks. But whenever you played against the Blackhawks, regardless of it was one season or, you know, multiple seasons, what was the tenor of play like? What was it like facing the Blackhawks as an opponent?
It was difficult. You know, going into the game, the coach would always game plan against it, saying, this is the upper echelon in the NHL. You guys have to be ready to play this team because they are what we want to strive to be. And then on the ice, you know, it was a team that always had incredible offense, but I think their offense came from swarming defense, not letting teams through their neutral zone, taking space away quickly, and then transitioning to offense as quickly as they could. And I think that's what the best teams do. They defend quickly and break the puck out and transition to get an offense better than the other team. So this team has the ability to do that. They have puck movers in the back end who can do that, and obviously the skill up front to be dominant offensively. So it's a fun group to be a part of, and I'm looking forward to joining it.
Yeah.
We talked about your game a little before you got here, and maybe your ears are burning, I don't know. But why don't you describe for the fans that are curious exactly how you play and how your style of play is?
I think I'm more a blue-collar type player. I think my my game is success is when I skate hard and move my feet and finish my checks. I think that's through my work ethic is where my success comes. So I try to be a 200-foot player who's going to finish every check possible. You know, that's going to get under the opponent's skin at time, but, you know, do it in a legal way by not taking too many penalties. So I think I have the ability to score some goals. I hope to get back to that and be a complete 200-foot player.
Yeah, to be a 200-foot player, that is music to the ears of Joel Quenneville, because I know that he's told me, I don't know how many different times, you're judged with the Blackhawks, particularly by this coaching staff, in how you defend. So if you're strong in the offensive end, but getting back into your end and you don't know what back-checking is, you're going to probably get one shift with Q and then get talked to on the bench. And if it doesn't improve with the next shift, you'll be in the stands eating popcorn. So if you know how to play that game, I think that will really help to fit right in, you know, and especially early on in the season.
Yeah, and I think especially as a, you know, the term bottom six player, you have to be able to defend well. You know, you don't want your top end guys starting their shifts in the D zone. You know, it's
right.
Much harder. You look at any way you analytics break down a shift, you have more chances of playing offense during the offensive zone. So we don't want certain guys starting the O zone. So you have to have a coach needs to have confidence in the guys to be able to break the puck out of their zone and then not get scored on. So that's where I'll try to earn Coach Q's trust right away, and then offensively go on from there.
Is there anything you're looking to improve on this season, joining a new team, that you want to focus on overall?
Yeah. I think my compete level is good. Forechuck's very good. Defensively good. I think I can bring more offensively than I have in years past. A couple of years ago, you scored the double-digit goals, but it's kind of faded a bit the past couple of years. But I'm confident in my abilities. I'm confident that I can score more than I have, and it's about staying with it. It's a long season. You can't get in mentally drain yourself when you go through 4, 5, 6 games without a goal. But if I focus on using my speed, being physical, and making sure my work ethic leads my game, I think I'll be in a good spot.
Blackhawks and St. Louis Blues games are really events, and I go to that because it's kind of suited to your style of play. You like to play the physical game. I've seen you finish checks on guys, and it's like, that's got to hurt. But you're going to play against the St. Louis Blues as a member of the Chicago Blackhawks now, which to me, if you're from Chicago and you're wearing that sweater and you're going into St. Louis or you're playing the Blues here at home, you're bringing a little more adrenaline to the building that night. How about it?
Yeah, I think so, especially the past two summers I've lived in St. Louis for the off season, so a couple people down there have gotten to know me, and there were none too happy folks when I signed with Chicago here, but I think that just adds to it. I've seen the playoff rivalries. I've known it for years. The Blues, Blackhawks, dislike for each other, and those are the kind of series and rivalries I want to be a part of. That's what makes the game fun. So I look forward to it. Hopefully they allow me to come back down here for a couple more weeks and allow me to enjoy my summer, but we'll get back up here as soon as we can.
How about the rest of the Central Division? I know you played out west in San Jose and a little bit in Ottawa there, but you didn't have as much experience against the Central as you will now. I mean, what are your thoughts about facing what are going to be some very tough opponents?
Yeah, I think the game has just changed. I think 4 or 5 years ago, I think there were, let's call it freebie points in the league. I really think there were, and some of those may have been in the Central. But you don't have that anymore. Every game is tough, especially when you're playing for a team like the Blackhawks. Each team measures himself, to the level where the Blackhawks are. So even the teams that are at the bottom of the standings, you're going to get their best effort, and you really are. So it's going to be tough. Nashville is a heck of a team. They're the 8th seed in the playoffs, and obviously as far as they go.
Yeah.
So this division is tough, and hopefully there's a handful of guys that don't enjoy playing against me after a few games.
I like the sound of that, man.
Well, Tommy, if you're on ice play, if you can handle a gauntlet of questions like this, I think you'll be able to play for the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
Tommy, thank you, bud. See you at training camp. Be well. Tommy Wingles. Well, that was great, Scott. I enjoyed talking to him. I think he's going to be a real asset for the team.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Like I said, we shot a lot of questions at him.
Sure.
He had a lot of great responses. A local guy, plays really hard. Yeah. I think he's going to be just fine here.
Miami of Ohio, so they don't teach dummies down there. You got some tough curriculum to get through if you're going to graduate.
Oh, some top alumni, I believe.
Yeah.
Top.
Yeah, you got that right.
John, while we wait for our next guest, actually, you did a wonderful interview on the download with Justin Kaufman last year. I actually listened to it the day you were on. It's such a great introspective in your career and everything you've accomplished. And I encourage people to listen to that. It's still online if they want to know more about you. But I'm so curious about that year in 92, I think, was a year that your career was really made, where you were bartending at Zany's in Mount Prospect. And I got to ask you about this because I did do stand-up comedy for a while, and I booked comedy shows. But anyways, you drove your car out to the draft, and then you wound up putting out a bunch of feelers to see who's hiring. But I want to ask you just about working at Zany's, what it was like to see so much live comedy, and who came through there that you liked?
Oh, gosh, we had some great names come through there. John Campanera, do you remember him? He'd do the Harry Carey imitation. Oh, he was
fantastic.
Awesome. He's from here, by the way, from the Chicago area. He's that guy. Judy Tenuta made her way through. And I love Judy Tenuta's
You
comedy.
Said that last year in the media room, and Mark Lazarus wanted to give you a beating, but I defended you.
Lazarus, he's too young. That's all I can say. How many people out there remember Judy Tenuta? I would be on my floor laughing, and tears would be coming out of my eyes. Hey, pigs! Like that. And she'd go on.
Who else was there? Who else are your favorites?
Jay Leno came through one night.
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah.
And I don't know how many of you remember, but one Christmas, right before Christmas, I think it was early December, Motorola in Schaumburg laid off like 300 or 400 people. And Jay was in Los Angeles, and he saw it in the paper. He saw it in the USA Today about these layoffs at Motorola. And he felt bad. So he called up Rick, and he says, hey, Rick, he says, listen, can you get the feelers out and get a hold of these people, get them in the club on Sunday night, he says, and I'll give them a free show. He says, and don't worry, he says, we'll take care of everything. They want food, we'll take care of them. They want drinks, we'll take care of them. It was Jay Leno, and Jay's got a little bit of money in his pocket. So we are told by our manager, okay, you guys are coming in on Sunday night, and you're going to be giving your time. And I didn't really like the sound of that initially because I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, what? I got bills to pay. He says, this is what's going on. The folks from Motorola that were all laid off before Christmas are going to come in and get these special shows, and Jay Leno is going to provide the entertainment. Wow, I'm in. So we all show up to work, and Jay does two great shows. He was hilarious. I was back slinging hooch at the bar, making all kinds of drinks you can't even imagine. And so one show ends, and this was one of the cool parts of the evening. One show ends, and Jay comes back to the bar, Jay Leno, and I don't know, you guys probably know he loves cars. So I get him talking. He asked for like a just a glass of water, and I said, sure. I said, hey, Jay, I said, I know you work on cars, though. He goes, yeah. I said, you know what? I said, I got a problem with my I think it was my radiator.
Hey, Jay, will you look at my muffler for me?
And he goes like this. He says, well, you know what that is? Here's what you do. And he says, you do this, you do that. And he just got right into talking about cars. And we could have been there 3 hours, him talking about cars. But he was just such a wonderful guy. And then he went back. He did another show. So we're all back in the bar area, and we're cleaning up, and we're thinking that's the end of the night. Jay's going to get in his limo. He's going to get out to O'Hare, get on a plane. He's gone. That's what we're thinking. Well, that's not how it went. So we all get back into the back, and Jay comes out, and one of the girls has a bag of Doritos because that was one of the products he was endorsing at that time. And so we got a group picture. Jay says, thank you, everybody. You guys did a great job. And he was on his way. We all shook his hand. It didn't end there. Jay leaves. The door closes, and in comes Rick. And Rick has envelopes in his hand. And he says, Jay didn't want you guys to go away empty-handed. Each one of us got an envelope with $200 in it.
Wow.
From Jay Leno. And that's the kind of guy he was. I love Jay Leno. Not because of the money, but because of the kind of a person that he was and how he helped those people from Motorola who probably didn't have a very great Christmas that year.
What an awesome story.
Yeah.
Was that the only year, 92, that you bartended there?
I was there 91 and 92. Yeah. A guy named T.X. Jones was my boss. And
that's right.
He's one of my better friends now. I love the guy.
Do you think seeing all that live entertainment, especially comedy, maybe translated or worked its way somehow into your sensibilities, the way you brought? Because, you know, you're a guy that doesn't take yourself seriously. You like to have a lot of fun on the air.
Yeah.
Did that shape you at all?
A little bit. I have to admit a little bit because, you know, I look at the way the comics get up there and, you know, they get up on stage. Now, you people are all sitting in your chairs looking up at me, and I'm looking out at you, and I know you guys are just human beings, so I'm not, I don't have the fear that a comedian would have, because a comedian gets up, and Scott, you were a comedian,
yes, sir,
and you know what I'm talking about. You get up there, and you got to get the crowd loosened up with a joke, and then you got to follow that up with what you think is a better joke, and then, you know, maybe another joke, and when nobody reacts, you're sitting there, and what's going through your mind is not, well, maybe I'll use this joke or that joke. You're thinking, I'm dying up here. I gotta do something. I gotta pull this out of the fire. So, the successful comedians have about a 10-minute really tight act and good act. And,
it depends.
Then they build from there.
Yeah, 5 for TV, 10. You start as a host. You have a tight 10, and you work your way up to feature, headliner. Yeah, it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you know how it's done. That's awesome. I definitely wanted to ask you about that. That's really cool.
It was fun working there. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is I know you talked about this in some interviews already, obviously, but how hard is it to not only do the play-by-play action in one of the fastest team sports in the country, but also you're telling a story? There's a story to every game. How hard is it to kind of do that?
Well, some nights it's harder than others because some nights the game just isn't really that exciting. It's very rare that it is with the Blackhawks not exciting. I'm pretty fortunate. I've got a team that I get to talk about that I could go on and on and on about them. But some nights they don't play up to the level that they need to play, and you know, then you're struggling a little bit. Now, there's a rule of thumb in hockey broadcasting about preparation. You do 100% preparation, But chances are, in any given game, you're only going to use 10% of it, right? Because the game dictates what you talk about. But there are those other nights when that other 90% comes into play. And so that's the stuff you talk about to get through the night. Troy Murray is over here. He's shaking his head as if I'm lying to you, but he does the prep too. Big hand for Troy. Big hand for Troy. The partner.
There he is.
Greatest partner in the world, by the way. But, yeah, it's most nights it's a lot of fun. Most nights we don't. We prepare for what we're going to do. And when we get on the air, we know we worked hard. And that's when we have fun doing what we do.
You've called three Stanley Cup clinchers. How much time do you give it to think about what exactly you're going to say? Do you know what you're going to say? And do you want it to be, I guess, how do you compartmentalize it being, you know, I want it to be exciting. The moment's exciting, but I also want it to be sentimental. It means a lot for a franchise, for the fans. I guess, what's your process in saying the right thing at the right time?
That's a good question, because there is some contravation to it, okay? I did think about what I was going to say for each one, even though I like to be spontaneous if I can and kind of go off the cuff, you know, that kind of thing. But I think in order to get that moment right, especially for a city that, you know, in the before they won the cup in Philadelphia, it had been 49 years. So I had to think about all of the elements that went together, the hockey team, the starvation of 49 years, the city of Chicago, how great it was, and the great fans. So I put that all together after Patrick Kane scored the goal. Now, nobody knew when the goal was going to be scored. And for the Patrick Kane goal, we stood there for probably 5, maybe 10 seconds wondering, is that puck in the net? Because nobody could see it. It was in the bottom of the net, and the bottom part of the net was covering the puck except for the very back of the puck. And I remember Troy could see it. Troy, he says, it's in, like that. And when he did that, I looked down, and I remember Michael Layton turning one way or the other in the goal crease, and I saw the back of the puck, and I knew it was in. I see Kaner running up ice or skating up ice, celebrating, throwing his gloves off, and, you know, the boys celebrating, and that's when I got with the call. 2015 was a little more contrived. 2015, I went to John and Jay, and I said, look, this, if we win tomorrow night, this would be our third cup in 6 seasons. Is there anything you want me to say in that moment? And John says, John, you're the artist. I'm leaving it up to you. So the pressure was on. But we had fun.
I think the big story about you getting hired, one of the biggest reasons, it sounds like, is that Bill Wirtz heard you calling a fight like a boxing man. I know it's really become a famous story with you, but I just think the insight you had to do that in your reel, because I know you recorded it to get to people in charge of hiring. How great is that? That's what differentiated you from all the guys. Didn't even want to look at other guys because he liked that detail so much. Can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate. That took place in July of 2006, and I submitted a CD. And at that time, I was the radio voice of the New York Islanders. Well, the Islanders had a guy named Eric Goddard, who was a tough guy, really tough. And the New York Rangers had a guy named Colton Orr. And whenever the Islanders would play the Rangers, these two guys would get together on the ice invariably, and they'd throw the mitts down, and they'd have a go, and it was a great fight. So in my late teens and early 20s, I used to box, and so I got to know what the punches were. And I remember I was a speed bag. Just
Troy Murray pretending to box here on stage.
So
looks like he may be joining us.
As he is. He's going to throw the headset on. So anyway, as Orr and Goddard are firing punches at each other, I'm just identifying the punches, never even thinking where this was going. I mean, this happened at center ice in Madison Square Garden. I just called the punches. I called what I saw. So when I put together the demo to send to the Blackhawks in 2006, I thought, yeah, I'm going to throw that on there because I think that was a pretty exciting call. You know, it was Madison Square Garden and this and that and the other. And I didn't know it, but during the process, and this is a true story, Mr. Wirtz was listening to the tapes and the CDs of the various people who were applying for the job, and he got to mine. And he heard goal, hit, save, fight. And after the fight, into the next cut, whatever it was, he held up his hand. He was sitting at the table with a whole bunch of people in the room. He goes, stop. He says, that's the guy I want right there. And Jim DeMaria, who was my boss at the time, says, well, are you sure, Mr. Wirtz? There's a bunch of others. He says, no. That's the guy I want right there. Whoever that guy is, get him. And that was mine. And I thought about it, and I thought, Bill Wirtz picked me out of a pack of I don't know how many, but he was a prize fighter in his youth, and he knew the punches too. And so in his mind, he's hearing me talk about these punches, and I have a feeling that's what put me over the top. Other than that, I really don't know. But when I think about that moment in my life, I mean, it just seemed to happen, and I had the good fortune of coming here through all of that.
Troy Murray joining us now with John Weideman. I'm Scott King, if you're listening here or at home. And we have a nice group of fans here. You guys, how good are they at the game broadcast? How good is this team here right here? We're missing Judd, but, I mean, these guys are amazing.
We don't need Judd.
Troy, I talked to you about
way to go, Troy.
Well, way to go, Troy.
Created some drama here at the Blackhawks convention. It's going to be on TMZ later. Troy, we talked last night about your guys' chemistry, what goes on in the booth during the broadcast. I guess just can each of you kind of describe everyone's role, why your chemistry works so well, and how much fun you guys have?
Well, the one thing I always tell John is, because especially on radio, it's hard for the color guy to kind of get involved. When you're on TV, you can let it breathe a little bit, and you can kind of talk over what's going on because you can see what's going on in the play, and if there's nothing going on, Eddie can kind of talk a little bit over the broadcast. In radio, and what John does such a fantastic job at, is if you're listening to it, you want to know exactly what's going on at all times. And so John gets that, and he like play to play, wherever, doesn't miss a pass, doesn't miss a name. It's incredible with all the tough names to enunciate in the NHL. He gets them perfect, you know, each and every time, and he takes a lot of pride in that. He does a lot of homework to make sure that he knows the names off by heart. So for me, when I'm, you know, doing the color, when the play stops, when the whistle goes to end the play, that's for my time to kind of jump in and start describing what happened, why it happened, if there's any rhyme or reason to why the situation kind of happened or the play, whatever, and that's my time. And then as soon as the puck drops, I give it back to John. So I tell John, I go, whistle the whistle. And as soon as the whistle blows, I'll give it back to you. When they're going to drop the puck, I let him do it because it's important for the listeners to know what's going on. And we've done this, and it's my mistake that I talk a little bit long and I get long-winded. The puck drops and the right off a face-off, and they shoot and they score. And, you know, John's watching the play, so he has to basically interrupt me, you know, when the goal goes in or something, because you have to know that somebody scored a goal. So that's kind of the way it works for our broadcast. I love working with John. I honestly think that he's the best in the business, and I listen to a lot of the broadcasts around the NHL, and his call play-by-play is second to none, and it's amazing. And
thanks,
anybody,
bud,
who's ever listened to the broadcast, you can paint the visual image of what's going on the ice just because of the way that he's describing the play.
And by the way, I never mind it when I have to do that jump in quick about the goal, because it's one goal. It's, you know, okay, it happens. Stuff happens. Let's move on. Don't worry.
Yeah, but the good thing is sometimes he talks a little bit past the whistle. Just happens.
Sometimes.
So, you know, and then he's got to kind of cough a little bit, clear his throat. So he knows this. He looks at me and you know, just when the puck's going to drop, he finishes his thought, and then he wants, you know, me to say something. And he'll kind of look at me, and he's going to hit his cough button, and I'm just sitting there like this. And he goes like this. He goes, keeps talking.
Yeah. That'll learn you.
John, how nice is it to have a guy who played the game that could have so much perspective on so many different situations like Troy? What does that add to the broadcast?
Immensely. I have told people since Troy and I began working together, and I'll say it again, when Troy tells you something about what happened during the game that we're broadcasting, take it to the bank, because he's been in every conceivable situation on the ice in the National Hockey League. I think you were even in the goal one time, a couple times, trying to stop pucks during the Murray Bannerman years.
I actually do think that there's a video of me playing real bad goalie.
Yeah.
Someone look on YouTube. I'd love to see that video.
But Troy's been there. Here's what I love working with Troy anyway, because we have a lot of fun, and we both prepare. We both think about taking pride in our work too. I mean, that we feel an obligation toward you guys. I mean, you guys are good enough to listen. We got to give you some entertainment. We got to give you a show. We got to give you a lot of good information. So when Troy is talking and he's analyzing something that just happened, okay, he can analyze it to a degree that I couldn't even come close to, because I never stepped on the ice in the National Hockey League. He played 15 seasons and won a Stanley Cup with Colorado. So this man knows what he's talking about. And he played back during an era where, in my opinion, the 1980s was the greatest era of hockey in all the history of the game of all time in the National Hockey League, because they combined athleticism with passion, with skill, with rivalry, with every other component you could possibly come up with for the game of hockey, along with some of the greatest buildings of all time. So Troy really, in my opinion, played during the greatest era of the National Hockey League. But when he says something to you, you take it to the bank, because he knows what he's talking about. He's not just filling up the airways with a lot of blather until the play-by-play guy's ready to talk again. How about that, bud?
No, I appreciate it.
Throw that on the resume.
Thank you kindly.
You bet.
Hey, it looks like we have Alex DeBrincat and Anthony Lewis are here. Everybody, you guys want to hear from them?
Come on up, boys.
All right, boys. There they are.
Looking forward to
it. Let's let them slowly walk out. We kind of rushed Tommy Wingles, who's in a boot, onto the show. I don't know if that's that well with the organization. We'll see.
Have either of you guys worn a headset? Uh-oh. This part goes in front, okay? There you go.
John's going to guide you through the whole process. Thanks. We have the engineer, Adam, helping him with their buttons. Perfect.
Our terrific engineer, Adam Phillips. Thank you, Adam. Appreciate that. Good job.
That's a nice round of applause for Adam there.
Doggone right.
All right, now, guys, this is your – I believe this is both of your first convention. What's the experience been like? What's the fan reception been like? Did it exceed your expectations at all?
Yeah, I'm from Chicago, so it's pretty special to be here for the first time. I've never even seen it before as a fan or anything.
This is Anthony Lewis talking, by the way.
But, yeah, it's pretty cool feeling to be here. And
what? You can push your mic closer.
Let me work with your mic. There you go.
A little
there
behind the how the sausage is made radio.
You'll be a pro by the time we're done.
There you go.
Is that good?
That's
there
great.
Go.
Yeah, that's great.
You guys can get jobs soon. You guys look great. But what's your experience been like, Alex, with the convention so far? It's the second day here. A lot of people coming up to you, knowing who you are, wanting a picture, wanting an autograph.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they've been great to me. My autograph signing last night was pretty packed, and I was pretty surprised for that. So, you know, they don't say they're the best fans in the NHL for nothing, so it's pretty good.
I got one question to ask, Alex, and wouldn't you know a play-by-play guy would ask this question so that all of you will know, how do you say your name correctly? Is it DeBrincat or DeBrincat?
DeBrincat.
There it is. There it is. I have to do that in the dressing room.
We got some people nodding. Okay.
I get it. Oh, English teachers.
It's Murray,
history
if you're
teachers.
Wondering.
Murray. With an M.
Alex, last year, I mean, what a season. And, I mean, Canadian Hockey League Player of the Year. You know, some real good stuff. 65 goals last year. 62 games. Is that what it was?
63. But
63, yeah. 63 goals or 63 games?
63 games.
63 games. Not bad. You know, talk about last year and, you know, the success that you had. Unfortunately, it didn't end quite the way that you're hoping to, losing in the final game.
Yeah, it was a great season. You know, we had a great team, and, you know, it was definitely a fun year. With all the guys we had on our team, it was such a great group of guys. And, yeah, we came up a little bit short, but the whole season was so fun. And, you know, just to win an OHL championship with those guys was pretty great.
You played with some pretty, you know, impressive players that are now young players in the National Hockey League. Talk about a few of them.
Yeah, Connor McDavid for one.
Well, you know, but real quickly here, Alex played with Connor McDavid, and, you know, he was the MVP of the league last year. I mean, what a phenomenal two seasons he's had. He was hurt last year, but at the same time, man, what a great young player. 52 goals with Connor?
51.
51. I'm off by one. But 65 this year, and everybody was kind of saying, well, it's all because of Connor McDavid. You know, he had an opportunity to play some other guys as well. So, I mean, that speaks volumes of the fact that it wasn't just a Connor McDavid show. And you know, this is legit in your 65-goal score without him.
Yeah, I mean, Connor definitely helped me out a lot. You know, he's a tremendous player, and, you know, I'm sure you guys have all seen that. So, you know, he was great. And, you know, we also had a lot of other stars on our team, too. You know, we have Taylor Radish and Dylan Strome, and, you know, I could go down the line. And, you know, just no matter what line I was on or who I was playing with, you know, they were always good enough to find me. And, you know, it was just a great team.
Yeah, congratulations on a great season.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
It was a great season individually and team-wise.
I talked with Anthony about this last night. I mean, you guys both put yourself in a great position to be seen by the organization and be showcased by the organization. But you're 5'7 and 5'8. How many people, you know, tried to deter you or tell you you're not big enough to play at a top level? And have you used that as motivation to prove everybody wrong?
Yeah, I mean, you see it everywhere. You know, too small to play at the next level, or you know, so on. But I think I've kind of proved some people wrong, and you know, hopefully there's not too many doubters out there anymore. But you know, if there are, you know, it's just kind of motivation from now on, and you know, I'm confident in my abilities, and I know what I can do, so. It doesn't really matter what they say.
I think you were saying the same thing last night, Anthony, right? You know, you use as motivation. Teams are looking for skill and speed now. There's not a lot of big NHL teams anymore succeeding anyways.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been happening my whole life, and obviously with him too, I'm sure. So I use it as motivation as well and just go out there and play my game every day. So
you look at, you know, two guys that, you know, in some ways play a very similar style. One went to juniors. One went through the collegiate system. When I played at University of North Dakota way back in the 80s, it was Miracle on Ice that kind of set the tone for the college players that now, you know, started to play in the National Hockey League. You know, talk about your experiences going to school, 4 years at Miami, right?
Yeah, Miami University.
Talk about your experience there and having the, you know, the opportunity to go to school, a little bit of a different route than Alex did.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot different. It's not as professional as I said. These guys would play. They play about, what do you play, 80 games?
68.
Yeah, 68 games. We play only like 30, 35, so it's a much shorter season. But over the 4 years, I think it was good for me to go there and develop it and get stronger and just work on all aspects of my game and also get my degree. So I think it worked out really well for me.
What degree did you get?
Sports management.
Wonderful.
That'll fit with what you're trying to do.
That's good. That's great.
Good job. Tell the folks a little bit, Anthony, about your background, a little like where you're from, the western suburbs of Chicago, but that's where it started until you got to here. What happened in between?
Yeah, I started at DuPage Center Ice Arena, which is about an hour from here, if any of you guys know. So I'm from Winfield. I grew up there. I played through the Chicago Mission and Team Illinois, and then I went on to go to USA, sorry, and then off to Miami.
What was Donnie Granato? Did you?
Yeah.
So Donnie Granato is one of the new assistant coaches. So you went through the program when he was there.
Yeah, he was awesome.
You like him?
That's very cool.
Can't say you don't.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite coaches, actually.
I think our own Brittany Toulis has a question for maybe both you guys.
Yeah, both ones. So you said you had your autograph line yesterday, and I'm sure people have been coming up to you all day to sign stuff. What's the goofiest thing someone has had you sign? Have you signed any babies lately or any, like, beer bellies?
No, I can't say there's too many weird things.
There's still time. There's still all day today and tomorrow. So.
Yeah, this might not be the right convention for that. I don't know.
It's probably the wrong time to ask you to sign my belly. What's the most common things you guys ask to get signed? Is it jerseys? Is it posters? I mean, what sticks? What have you seen the most?
Probably pucks.
Pucks
and, like, mini sticks, some Chicago posters.
Is that just a real thing that people want your autographs? I mean, you guys played hockey your whole life. Like I said, you put yourself in a good position here. But is it weird that people want to meet you, want your autograph to collect?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Alex, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's you grow up and you're looking up to some of the guys and, you know, you want their autographs. And then, you know, you end up in this position where they're trying to get yours. So it's pretty crazy and, yeah, definitely surreal.
I want to stay on that for just a second because this is your first conventions for both of you. And you're mixing with Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and the name players on the Chicago Blackhawks. What's that experience like to know that you're now a part of that group? Anthony, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's at times you feel like you shouldn't even be here because it's the first time and you see those guys just get bombarded with people and kind of standing in the corner and then it happens to you a little bit. It's a pretty cool feeling to know that you're part of it now. And
the one advice that I can give both of you guys is don't say, growing up, I was a big fan of yours. If you see Marian Hossa, don't say, man, I loved you when I was a kid. It doesn't go over well. So you guys know who Tony Esposito is, right? So I come here, I'm 19 years old after my second year at North Dakota, and come out of school, finish up the season. You know, Tony at that point, I think, was probably 50. I was 19. Tony basically had kids that were as old as I was. And it was hilarious because I've just gone, man, you know, I used to love watching it. It's like, watch it, kid.
A little awkward.
Because, Anthony, you're going to have your full season at Rockford, your first full season. You joined in the spring last year for a little bit. What are you looking to showcase or work on right now, coming up for this season?
I'd probably say my defensive game to start with. I think going there for the last 12 games of last season was a good learning experience for me. And just learn their systems a little bit and sit back and see all their players take it all in and go from there. It's just going to be a learning experience for the first few weeks and hopefully go off smoothly from there.
When you know your defense is something you want to work on, what can you do fundamentally either in games or at practice to enhance that, to expand on that?
Just some drills we do, it some defensive zone stuff, ask coach for little things that you can get better at and block shots. It always helps your defensive game, and don't be flying around too much in the defensive zone. Just kind of stay calm and relax and just kind of play the system, and it'll work out well.
How much are you guys looking forward to training camp coming up in September? I would think both of you are just dying to get there.
Yeah, it'll be a fun time. It's only about a month away, so it'll be fun going there with the team and meet the guys again and get out there on the
ice. Will both of you guys be going to the Traverse City rookie week that they have?
Yeah.
Did you go last year?
Yeah, I went last year.
It's a pretty kind of a cool experience to get in that game situation and play against guys who, you know, you're going to play against in the National Hockey League for years to come.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's a lot of great players there and a lot of people who played in the NHL this year too. So, it was pretty tough, very fast, and, a lot of hitting. But it was a good experience, and, hopefully this year we can come out with a win.
Well, you know what? If you need protection, John Scott lives up there now. He's former Blackhawks.
He was signing books downstairs. I saw the guy 6'8 pushing a stroller with two kids in it. I've never seen anything like that in my life.
He's got four daughters and one on the way.
Yeah.
Good family.
He's awesome.
He's a great guy, John Scott.
He's awesome.
Good man.
Alex, is this the big shot for you, this training camp? Is this the moment that you think you've been waiting for your career so far and playing as a kid and everything? You had one last year. You had another great season in the OHL. Is this your time to shine coming up to this training camp?
I guess you could say that. And, I think I have a good opportunity here. And, I could go to either place, Rockford or Chicago. So it's, two great places I could develop. And, I'll be happy with either of them. So, just getting to the first season of pro is, going to be huge for me. And it should be really fun this year.
For both of you guys, I don't know, maybe overall or at the convention now, do you interact with the guys that are on the roster now a lot, and how have they received you? How do they treat you guys?
They're pretty welcoming. It's just kind of like a meet and greet for us. I feel like they're all like catching up with each other, and they're there to talk to us a little bit when they can, but they're pretty busy throughout the week.
Do they give you any advice, Alex? Do they say, hey, you know, it's a long process, or you're going to go through this, make sure you do that, anything like that?
Not really. Like you said, they're pretty busy, and when we see them for a few minutes at a time. So it's kind of just getting to know each other rather than what to look forward to.
Have you, Alex, personally thought a lot about how either maybe this season or next season or sometime soon you might have an opportunity to play on a line with one of the best players in the league in Patrick Kane? Has that entered your mind? Have you kind of visualized what that might be like?
Try not to think about that too much. Just kind of. I'm excited for camp, and I'm going to try going, trying to make the team, but anything can happen. So I've kind of kept an open mind and just worried about my game and the way I know I can play.
If you guys spend any time in Rockford, you're going to be playing in front of a slightly different coaching staff. Now, Jeremy Colliton, who was a New York Islanders draft pick and player, he's the head coach in Rockford, and former Blackhawk Sheldon Brookbank is going to be an assistant coach up there, along with Derek King. And so quite a bit of expertise there and knowledge. That'll be a little bit of a different look up in Rockford. But, you guys, I would think that that would be make it kind of interesting, forming the team chemistry, not just the chemistry within the players, but with everybody. Either one of you guys want to grab that. I don't know. Just throw it out there.
Both those guys obviously are very experienced, and I think they're going to be able to teach us a lot throughout the game and how we could develop to potentially make the big team. So I think it's going to be great to have the new coaches there, and it'll be fresh, so we'll be able to play our own game and a little bit more than maybe in the past.
Yeah, the one thing that is always important that, you know, the minor league coaching staff and the Blackhawks coaching staff, everybody's on the same page as far as what they do. The systems are going to be very similar. You know, you guys, if you end up playing there, will be playing in the big situations, and they'll put you in a position that you will be able to, you know, excel once you get, you know, to the National Hockey League or get that opportunity if you do happen to go down to Rockford, you know, prior to playing in the NHL. So it is pretty cool to have former players that have been there before. They played in the National Hockey League, and they can give you that advice that, you know, my advice is to be a sponge anytime you have an opportunity to absorb any of the information that former players or current players that, you know, they talk to you. Make sure that you're absorbing all that, because that's important for you guys going down the road.
Thank you guys very much for joining us. Anthony Lewis and Alex DeBrincat, everyone. Thanks, guys. Have a good convention.
Best of luck, guys. Best of luck. You can.
All right. I think we just have another minute or two before the beat's going to broadcast from here. Troy, John, I just want to get your guys' take on where you think the franchise is right now. Thanks, man. Thanks. What do you think is going on? Are we quietly kind of seeing a bit of a rebuild with some of the core guys still intact? Is that championship window closing a little bit as we're rebuilding? What do you guys think?
They're not closing the window, and that's for sure. You know, right at this point, it's not going to be acceptable, you know, other than they want to win the Stanley Cup again. But I think the reality of what has happened here in Chicago with the salary cap situation has put this team every year in a real tough position. So what they've done in some ways is they've added some youth. They've got some great young prospects like Alex and Anthony that, you know, are going to have the opportunity to play this year, next year, wherever it is down the road. And make their names in the National Hockey League. But, you know, a lot of people don't realize that Brandon Saad is younger than Panarin. So you're getting younger there. You've got a four-year deal with Brandon that's still left on his contract. So there's some cap consistency that they've been looking for, some stabilization and not having players leave and come back every time. For Nicholas Chalmerson, you know, we love Artemi Panarin. We love Nicholas Chalmerson. You don't win three Stanley Cups without a guy like Nicholas Chalmerson. But you lost the first in the first round the last 2 years. So the reality of the whole thing is we have to look at this and say, you know, in the way that they lost to Nashville this year, do we need to make some changes? And do we need some, you know, consistency moving forward? You pick up Connor Murphy, who's 6 years younger than Nicholas Chalmerson, has 5 years on his contract. So, again, there's some cap consistency that they have. And I think that they've done some really good moves. You knew that you were going to lose Scott Darling and nobody wanted him to be leaving. But Anton Forsberg is a real good young goaltender. He's got some amazing numbers that John was throwing at me yesterday from the American Hockey League. And he was a big part of the trade in acquiring Brandon Saad. They wanted Forsberg in that equation because they were looking for a young goaltender with a ton of potential, but at the same time not a guy who's demanding a lot as far as his cap hit in the salary structure. So they've really done some nice things. I think for Patrick Sharp to be back here, everybody's excited to see Patrick. You know, he had some medical issues last year. He's been skating again. He said he's going to be 100% ready for training camp. And I think if you put Patrick Sharp along with Patrick Kane, he's going to score you 20 to 25 goals. And that will kind of replace the Marian Hossa's numbers from last year. So, you know, they've done some real interesting things as far as getting younger, getting some cap stability that they've been looking for the last couple seasons. I really think they're heading in the right direction.
And, Scott, the only thing I'll add to that, and I think Troy really, really hit the nail on the head with all of that, the only thing I'll add is that we have the good fortune of having a general manager that doesn't sit still. When he sees something is wrong, he is proactive that way. And he has a lot of support in helping him make those decisions. And, yeah, some of the moves were painful. I didn't want to see Nicholas Chalmerson leave town, and no one, I don't think anybody did. I didn't really want to see Marcus Kruger leave town. I love Marcus Kruger's game, and Scott Darling, same way. But those moves, as painful as they were necessary for the team to get into a better position in a competitive way for a longer playoff run. And maybe there's a message in there to the whole group that, you know, we're not going to sit still. We won't accept failure. There will be changes. So, you know, get it together when the time is necessary for you to play your best, play your best. So I think it was very healthy what he did.
We have to end our show real soon so the beat can broadcast from here. But we'll, real quick, there's some people I want to thank. I want to thank all the fans for coming out. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Got to thank John and Troy for joining me. Troy was a nice surprise. Appreciate him coming. Brittany helped us out, asked a question, doing all the behind-the-scenes stuff as usual. Engineer Adam. We have Mike Jacobson, my usual partner, helped get us here. Todd Manley from WGN, Dave Enit, Marlene Wells, and Adam Roggewin and John Steinmiller from the Blackhawks. Thank you, guys. Take care.